This morning's meditation is coming from something written 1,100 years ago by a poet named Sa'di. And Sa'di tells us that there are two kinds of people who experience unnecessary pain and hardship. One is the kind of person who collects possessions, wealth, and does not make good use of them. And the other is one who gains experience but does not use it to benefit anyone. However much knowledge you acquire, if you did not use it, you may as well be ignorant. You are neither a person who is seeking truth, but you are just like a donkey carrying a load of books. A brainless beast knows neither nor cares whether its burden is hardwood or books. Let all of us take the knowledge that has come to us and is available to us through all sources. May we use it to benefit not only ourselves but all humanity. Let us have a moment of prayer. In Greater Milwaukee, so this is the fourth I've attended. Whenever I come into your presence, I feel very happy because it's such a friendly environment and all of you are such interesting people who really care about others, care about learning, care about a whole range of things. Just listening to your concerns this morning, you know, these are the concerns of all of us, whether it's issues of mortality, our environment, our beloved family. And how do we address these issues? How do we live with the high points and the low points? A Muslim, an Islamic understanding, is really nothing unusual, nothing peculiar. We heard Kerry talk a little bit about the beliefs of a Muslim, the lifestyle of a Muslim. We fall within this great, broad tradition of monotheism, Judeo-Christian understanding. And one aspect of our understanding is that a very important part of our religion is, in fact, both giving advice and listening to advice, taking advice. And in Arabic, there's a word called nasiha. Nasiha means giving advice. And it's a requirement of our religion. You must give honest advice. Now, a wonderful thing about nasiha or advice is that the person who receives it does not have to take it. There's no requirement to take it because, you know, if we took all the advice we received in our lives, we'd be running in nice little circles all the time. So we have to use our own wisdom to decide which advice is useful and which is not. The advice that I want to share with you today is the advice that was given by a man who was about ready to die. And this man is known in historical books as Ali ibn Abu Talib. He lived between 600 and 661 of the Common Era. And he was the cousin of the Prophet Muhammad. He grew up in his household. He was the first man to accept Islam as his religion outside of the Prophet. His family was very close to that of the Prophet. When Ali grew up to be a young man, he married the Prophet's oldest daughter, and by this daughter had two sons, Hassan and Hussein. Later in his life, he became the fourth leader of the Muslim people, the fourth Khalifa. And historically, you all know of Ali because you've all heard of Shiites. And Shiites are the followers of Ali, Shiism. Ali is part of that. So Ali plays a very important historical and religious role, and he's known as a very thoughtful individual. And there are volumes of things that he wrote and letters and reflections. And I want to share with you the reflection that is represented by a letter he wrote to his beloved son Hassan about 3 or 4 days prior to his death. And the times in which Ali lived were tumultuous. so many of the leaders ended up getting assassinated. It was very easy to assassinate people through poison or stabbing in the back or what have you. And Ali ended up being assassinated. And the advice he gives his son really encapsulates what the important dimensions, what the important aspects of Islam are. But it's a universal advice. It's the kind of advice that you and I can take something home today that's as valuable as it is today in 2010 as it was in the year 661. Ali both wrote and spoke in a very literary manner. And he tells his son, Hassan, he says, "This is from the father who is shortly to die, who acknowledges the hardships of these times, and who is already turned away from life. And he submitted himself, referring to himself, to the problems, the calamities of time. He is one who realizes the evils of the world. He is one who is already living in the abode or the house of the dead and is due to depart on any day." And he's addressing this to my son, the son who yearns for what is not to be achieved. And of course, this is all of us. You know, we all have these fabulous dreams, and we only achieve a tiny part. And who is already treading the path of those who have already died. And of course, we know the common end for all of us is this end of mortality. So we're all treading the same path of people who have already died. Who is the victim of ailments, who is entangled in the worries of the days, who is a target of the hardships, a slave of the world, a traitor of its deception, a debtor of its wishes, a prisoner of mortality, an ally of worries, a neighbor of griefs, a victim of distresses, who has been overpowered by desires, and who is a successor of the dead. My own father wrote me almost every day when I lived in the Philippine Islands. Never wrote me like this, much more prosaic, but in the same sense, you know, sharing the status of our existence and the things that matter to us. And Ali tells his own son, and Ali, as we understand, 60 years old, 61 years old, about to die, he says, the most important thing, the number one thing, is to be conscious, to be aware of God. Be aware that you're not alone. Be aware that, you know, you came from something, that there's a purpose to your life. So he says, I advise you to be conscious of God, O my child, to abide by the commands of God, to fill your own heart with the remembrance of God, and to cling to that hope which God has given to all of us. No connection, nothing in this whole universe is more reliable, more predictable than the connection between you and God. So take hold of it. Enliven your own heart by talking about it, talking about those things which matter, those things which have relevance. Energize your own life by a firm belief in what is right, by those things which God has let us know about. Make sure that we humiliate ourselves or be humble to ourselves by understanding and being aware and conscious of our own mortality, by recalling death. Make sure that we always fear the authority of our time, those people in charge, those people who have power or want power. Be wary of them. You know, don't take hook, line, and sinker everything that people of power and authority give us, because there's always agendas that we can't understand. Recall that whatever is going to happen to you has happened to many generations before you. So this is, you know, very broad, conceptual, moral-based advice. Then he goes on, the next piece of advice he gives, he says, give up discussing what you do not know and speaking about what does not concern you? You know, we go from the most lofty to the most pragmatic. And, of course, how much of our own time is spent thinking and talking about things that are really not our business or about things that really don't concern us? The whole dimension of reality TV and reality talk shows and all these things are really a dimension of things that have no value or impact on our life, but yet take a lot of our time. So Ali is telling us 1,400 years ago, hey, give this stuff up. Don't worry about things which aren't really going to affect your life. And Ali says, habituate yourself. Get used to endure hardships. Now, this is contrary to modern wisdom, isn't it? Where we do absolutely everything to make sure there are no hardships. We have 5 baths in our house, so we don't have to wait 1 second, right? But Ali is saying, no, 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 get used to hardships. Hardships aren't bad things. You know, sometimes we think hardships are evil or somehow a problem, but Ali is saying, get used to these hardships because it builds character. It builds endurance. That life is not easy. That there's going to be a lot of problems in our life that 5 bathrooms and 4 cars and a wardrobe and 14 different iPhones and equipment are not going to solve. So get used to those basic hardships of life so that we can endure the problems that we are going to face. The problems that people talked about today and shared with us cannot be solved by the things, by the material things of this world. They can only be resolved and dealt with by what is inside of us, by the endurance and the hope and the wisdom that we have in our heart. Appreciate my advice, O my child, and know that the one who is the master of death, referring to God, is also the master of life. That the Creator causes death, the Creator causes illness, but also the Creator causes cure. The Creator gives us hope. The Creator gives us answers. That none of us should ever feel hopeless or sense of misery, because in fact for all of us there is a resolution, there is an answer, there is a sense that something is going to be better. And Ali then goes on and tells his son the golden rule. Oh my child, make yourself the measure for dealings between yourself and other people. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. For thus you should desire for others what you desire for yourself, and hate for others what you hate for yourself. Do not oppress. Do not be like the oppressed, or do not oppress people. Do good to others as you would like it done to you. Regard bad for yourself whatever you regard as bad for others. Do not talk about what you do not know. Do not say to others what you do not like said to you. Then he goes on to another kind of topic. And it's a psychological topic. And Ali says that know that self-admiration, I'm pretty good. I'm really wonderful. Self-admiration is contrary to propriety, and it's a calamity for our mind. So those people who are too invested in their own ego, in their own self-importance, this is not good. This is not only misleading, but it's not healthy. So he tells his son, even though he's going to eventually be the leader of the community, very wealthy, very so-called powerful person, be careful. Don't get too caught up in self-admiration and enthusiasm for your own accomplishments. He tells Hassan, he says, you know that in front of you lies a road of a very long distance. And he's talking about life as we move through our lives. And there's a lot of hardships, and we can't avoid these hardships. As we go along this journey of life, take requirements of provision, keeping the burden light. Now, any of you who are good travelers, you know, the guy with three huge 42-kilo bags and whatever doesn't have an easy trip. And Ali is using this metaphor that when you have this trip through life, don't get too burdened down. Don't take too much along with you. Whenever you come across a needy person who can carry your provision and hand it back to you on the day of judgment when you would need it, then accept this as an opportunity. Now, what does this mean? It means wealth, the things that are in excess of what we need. Don't hoard them. Don't try to carry them through life with us. But give them away. Give them to the poor. Feed the hungry. Take care of our environmental problems. Give to charity. Educate people. Because there's a payback. Whether you believe in a hereafter or not, there's a payback. If you believe in a hereafter, then in fact, all the good you do here on this earth comes back to you in the next. So Ali says, make sure you've got a light burden, don't accumulate too much, give it away, let other people enjoy it, and that there will be a payback, not only in this life and the next. If a person is willing to borrow from you in your days of affluence to pay back to you at the time of need, then take this as a great opportunity. So those of us who have acquired wonderful educations, what's the payback? You use your education to teach others, to serve others, to do something useful, not worrying about the money. The money obviously always comes somehow or someplace. But in fact, use these benefits that we've been given for the sake of other people, and that's the true value of anything that we're giving. Then he goes on to remind us. He says, "Oh, my child, know that you have been created for the next world, not for this." And, you know, when we all think about our bodies that are decaying and get diseased and issues of mortality, you know, somehow we kind of miss, we try not to think about these things. But in fact, our bodies were not made for this world. Our bodies are made to last a certain period of time. They're pretty good for much of our days, and then they start going down. Sometimes people have terrible problems even as a youngster. But in fact, the end for all of us is not too far out, 20, 30, 40, 100 years. But to understand that we're not made for this world, we're really made for something else. And this is all part of the Islamic concept. The Islamic concept is that all of us were put on this earth, try to do as much good as we can, try to avoid as much harm as we're capable of, that God in his mercy then judges us by whatever good we can do. And if we do enough good deeds in this world, then in fact the life in the next world is very sweet for us. So this is the religious background for the advice that Ali is giving his son. Be prepared against death because it's going to surprise all of us. And I know in my own family, you know, grandma or grandpa or my parents now, we're always kind of shocked when they finally die. But in fact, we shouldn't be. I mean, this is part of the natural part of life. And Ali then goes on to say that I should prefer that you keep what is in your hands rather than begging or being groveling or being grasping for what other people have. It's better to have the bitterness of disappointment than to go out and try to pander and to kind of sell yourself out for the things that other people have. So he's talking about self-respect. He's talking about satisfaction in the basis of contentment. And the basis of happiness, the basis of all of our pleasure, is not in what we have, it's in how happy we are with what we have, how satisfied we are with what we have. All of us know very wealthy, talented, capable people who are absolutely miserable because they aren't wealthier than what they are or not smarter than what they are. And we know very poor people who are just smiling and happy little campers. Why? They're satisfied with what God has given them. So the secret of self-happiness, contentment, is not in what we have, it's in how we view what we have. The satisfaction of being content with whatever has been written for us, whether it's being tall and good-looking, or short or not so good-looking, or a long life or a short life, sick or healthy, but to find contentment and happiness in whatever situation we have. And Ali then says that Ali is known for aphorisms. He's short, little tidbits of information, just much like Benjamin Franklin. You know, they would have gotten along very well in terms of their approach to life. And Ali says that the best guard of a person's secret is himself, that the person who speaks much speaks nonsense, that whoever considers something carefully gains wisdom. Associate with people of virtue, and then you yourself will become virtuous. Stay away from people who are scumballs and dishonest and deceitful, because you'll avoid having those kind of behaviors affect you. The worst food, the absolute worst food on earth, is that which you gain through unlawful means. If you cheat somebody, if you are dishonest in order to bring money home, in fact, the food you give your family for based on unlawful or horrible earnings is not a good meal. It's a bad meal. And oppressing the weak is the worst kind of oppression. Then he talks about friendship. And I don't know about your background, but I guess my background is very typical of much of the Midwest. I have a large family. Some are rural, some are city folk. But in our family, there's always groups of people who have stopped speaking to other groups of people. You know, there's aunt so-and-so who, you know, doesn't call anymore. We haven't heard from cousin so-and-so. They just won't talk to anybody anymore. You know, people cut themselves off from our family. Same with friends. What Ali says about this, he says, if you intend to cut yourself off from a friend or a family member, and we all are inclined to do this periodically, always leave the door open to resume that friendship or the relationship at a later day. Don't make the killer comment. Don't do that outrageous deed that cuts it all off for all time. Yeah, we get upset. Yes, we get our feelings hurt. Yes, there's problems. Maybe we don't want to talk to somebody for a while. That's fine. But don't do something that closes the door forever. In Islam, there's a custom that we can have arguments, we can have disagreements, but we have to go back and talk to the person we were angry at within 3 days. We can't stay mad for a week. We can't not take calls for a week. You got to go back in there, 3 days, cool off, get over it, and kind of go back in. And this is also what Ali is saying. You know, just always leave the door open for a rapprochement, of bringing the relationship back together again. And then the final advice he gives is he talks about our impulses of good and evil. And all of us are a collection of good and evil. I mean, we know ourselves. We know that we do some nice things and some bad things, and none of us are 100% perfect or 100% evil, that we're a combination of the two. And we all know that we have our temptations. We all have our hot buttons. For some people, it's their anger. For some people, it's greed. For some people, it's ego. You name it. Ali tells his son Hassan, he says, you know, my son, whenever you feel this impulse to be naughty, to do something you shouldn't be doing, delay it. Delay doing the naughty deed. Delay saying the horrible thing. Delay, delay, delay. You can always do the naughty thing later. Don't worry about it. You know, put it off for 10 minutes. You can do it 10 minutes from now, but the more time you put between this impulse to misbehave, and actually doing it, the less chance you have of doing something you don't want to do. This is the final advice to the son. And I say, what a wonderful advice. You know, just cool it, just relax. We can always call up and give somebody a piece of our mind. We can always tell somebody what we really think about them. We can do that, but let's just put it off a bit. My dear friends, there is available to us the complete wisdom of the world in many areas. Whether we want to look at the internet and read and talk to the elders and listen to our children, there's sources of wisdom everywhere. Really, the choice that we have every single day when we get up is, you know, what kind of person do we want to be? How do we want to lead our life? What are our values, and do we take our values and implement them in our way of life? I think it's too easy for all of us to be kind of heedless and mindless and thoughtless and be on autopilot and just develop a force that we just kind of go out and move and move and move without reflecting about what am I doing? Why am I doing something? What is the purpose? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Is there value or is there no value? What impact does it have on my family, the environment, my neighbors? All of us, I think, are well versed in what we should be doing. It's really that decision on how we want to lead our life. Let us reflect upon that and ask to be enthused and infused with what is right. Let each one of us closely examine the choices that are available to us. Let us always be aware that we're only one tiny piece of this universe, that we need to respect all of the creation of this universe, every single aspect of it, from the air to the mountains, to the animals, to the people. Let us have empathy and sympathy for other people. Let us lead our lives knowing that we're not going to remain on this earth, that we're here for a brief moment, that our job is to do as much good as we can and to avoid as much evil. Thank you. Amen.